It's a KABC Friday Night Special with the King of Hollywood Mysteries and Scandals.
Can you be more specific?
He also slaps stuttering John right in the gizzard.
Oh!
It's a Friday Night Special with AJ Benza.
Yes, it's AJ Benza here at KABC Friday Night Special. Feeling good out here. You know, it's very foggy tonight. I drove in. It was very hot on my side of the hill. I come down this side of the hill, very foggy and dark. And I hope that's not a warning of what's about to come on this next 2 hours. But got a fun show lined up. Of course, I'm going to begin the show by talking about myself, which I do really well. I'll do some Donald Trump because, you know, we all do and we all kind of have to. He's the president. And there's just so much to say about him. But the 9 o'clock hour is going to be great. You're going to want to stick around for the 9 o'clock hour. I've got director R.J. Bond, who made a documentary about Tupac Shakur and about Biggie Smalls, basically about their murders. And the guy knows who killed Tupac. And I tell you why I believe him because, well, I'll get to this later, but I ran with Tupac for a bit in New York in the mid-90s. I got to know him pretty well, kind of guy he was. He's very misunderstood, very misrepresented in the media. Which a lot of people are, but Tupac especially was. But RJ got to the meat of the issues, and a lot of it has to do with corruption in the LAPD. And I mean bad stuff. I mean, you got cops dealing drugs. You got cops killing cops. You have no idea. Lock your doors tonight. But that's coming up at 9 o'clock. RJ Bond is a heck of a director. You know, I just wolfed down 3 tacos around the corner before I got here. Then there was pizza in the lobby. And I can't pass pizza. I'm an Italian guy, so I had to grab a slice of pizza. And last night, I was just saying to my wife and my friends that, you know, it's official. I now have a face for radio. I'm 5'10", 220. I'm just like a circle now. Used to be a very good-looking guy. Got a lot of girls, a lot of attention. Movies, TV. Now I'm in a dark studio on a foggy night. 5'10", 220. Did I say 210? I meant 220. Now after the pizza, probably 222. But here's the thing. You know, I'm reminded of getting older and not being as handsome as I once was. You can call in and tell me if I'm wrong, by the way, if you want to. Please, just call in 800-222-5222 and tell me, AJ, you're looking great. Don't be ridiculous. I'll argue with you. But a lot of things starting to happen. A couple days ago, I read for a TV show. You know, Ryan Murphy, the great producer, he's the guy behind the O.J. Simpson television drama that won all the Emmys. Great stuff. And the next thing he's doing is a special on Katrina. And the thing after that is about the Gianni Versace murder down in South Beach. So they're casting Gianni Versace, his sister Donatella Versace, which maybe Lady Gaga might get, and his brother, Santo Versace. Well, they called me in to read for the role of Santo. You ever see Santo Versace? Not a good-looking man. But apparently, they liked what they saw in me. And they thought, hey, AJ can look like Santo. This is the kind of stuff I'm going through at 54 years old. It doesn't feel good. I don't like my smile. I never liked my smile. Now I really hate it. I don't like my laugh. Even my resting face, I don't like. So, without getting too personal, I will say, you know, how can I say this without getting in trouble? Let's just start it off. I'm going to get in trouble right away. You know, once in a while when you're with your wife or your girlfriend and you have those moments where you go, hey, maybe we should tape this. Maybe we should tape us. Get the tape recorder out. Let's watch this tomorrow. Well, one time my wife and I did it around 10 years ago, and then I forgot. And then about a week later, she showed me. And for a minute, I thought she was with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I didn't know who that man was in bed. The tape was destroyed, never to be seen again. But the point is, that's how I'm feeling about myself. So, by the way, if you feel I'm completely wrong, and I still got a lot going for me, give me a call. 1-800-222-5222. I'm going to bring up Donald Trump a lot because, you know, you hear me on the drive home with John and Jillian a lot. And obviously, some of you know the backstory of me and Donald Trump, how we got together, why I know him. I started out as a columnist for the New York Daily News. I was primarily a gossip columnist, and it got to be one heck of a career. I ended up meeting the world and being able to go everywhere, anytime, and meet everyone. And I had a lot of power back then. You know, gossip column, before social media, you could make or break a nightclub. You could make or break a restaurant, make or break careers if you wanted to. So Trump obviously was never a stranger to gossip columns, never a stranger to newspapers or getting himself ink. So the way Donald Trump worked the New York City papers, and he was brilliant at this. He knew that the gossip column game is basically a barter system. You call up the gossip columnist, you give him something, and then he gets to do something for you in return. So Trump always called with things to give me, and they were always interesting things. You know, Donald Trump is involved with a lot of stuff in New York City and basically knows every mover and shaker in New York. So he gave me a lot of stuff. And the paybacks he normally wanted were just kind of simple. You know, he wanted to be seen at a Knick game with a certain supermodel. You had to mention billionaire. You had to say billionaire. If you didn't put billionaire in the article, he was upset. He's that kind of guy, as you're finding out now. So he used the gossip columns extremely well. And there came a point where you know, I did him some solid favors. And one day I get in the mail a manila envelope of naked pictures of Marla Maples. All right. They're married. And I open this envelope up and there she is, nude. I mean, you know, it wasn't Photoshop. That was her. So rather than run to the city desk or call a tabloid and get paid, I said, let me do a solid thing and call the guy and tell him I got these naked pictures. And I did. And he said, well, look, you know, send them to my office. I'll let you know if they're real. You know, I did. And he called back and said, they're real. I owe you, man. You really? Thanks a lot. Now, looking back now, I wonder if he leaked those pictures to me. You know, that's not beneath him. A lot of us think that he leaked his tax forms to Rachel Maddow to kind of get the attention away from the Health Care Act. He's very ingenious like that. So whether he just wanted to show me how hot Marla was with no top on, I don't know. But he said, I owe you one. So I held him to that. So years go by, and I start to date this beautiful model. And, you know, when you go out in New York City, Trump is always around. He's at every restaurant, every nightclub, doesn't drink or smoke or do drugs, but he's out everywhere. He makes appearances. So he saw me with her, you know, gave me the look like, right on, she's something else, that kind of thing. And then in 1998, I left the newspaper and I came to L.A. for a job in television. And my girlfriend at the time, the model, said, you've got to go. You got to be a TV star. You got to be a TV star. Go. I knew if I went, the chances her and I would stay together were going to be kaput. You can't leave a woman like that in New York with all those dogs like Trump and the other billionaire friends. They track him down. So Trump tracked it down. He won. He got in there. He did his thing. It takes two to tango, but he did it. I wouldn't mind. The reason why I got so upset about it in the past is not because that he did it, because we're all men and I get it. It's that he was so public about it. And it's also the fact that he said, I owe you one. And he didn't honor that. And I'm a street guy. You got to honor that. So when he got very vocal about it, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard the Howard Stern dust up we had on the Stern show where I threatened to kill him. It's not the best idea, but who knew he was going to be president one day? So, you know, we had to dust up, and it was bad. It looked bad. And Trump said, I could take any girl you ever get. You're nothing. He destroyed me. So fast forward all these years now, I'm in L.A. And me and the ex-girlfriend were very friendly. We always talk, and we laugh about it now. So about 2 Augusts ago, when Trump was going up against Hillary in the primaries, my book came out in the summer, and I was going to go plug it in Extra. The TV show Extra called me up. I said, yeah, I'd love to come. They said, well, if you come, you got to talk about Donald Trump. I said, oh, okay. All right, I get it. So I said, I'm going to call him. I hadn't talked to him in a while, and I called him, and he picked up, and I said, listen, I got a book to sell. Extra wants me on TV. A lot of magazines are calling to talk to me. They all want to write about the book, but they all want me to talk about you and me and the girl. And to his credit, he said, sell your book, make money, talk, do what you have to do. He said, you're a winner, AJ. I said, I thought I was a loser. Nah, you're a winner now. And then I said to him, before I go, You know, I started doing these radio spots for KABC, and we get to talking about you quite a bit. I said, are you really serious about this presidential run? What are you doing? I said, you know, you're not that young anymore. How many great years do we have left? Do you have left? You got it made. Mar-a-Lago, the Jet. Why end your life with all this anguish and scrutiny and aggravation? I said, why? How many good summers do you have left? You know what he said? 30. The guy, he just thinks, you can't act like he just thinks he'll live to 100. And if you don't think so, you're an idiot. He said, about 30. I said, okay, I know, really. He says, no, I'm doing this because I want to pay back my country. The country's been very good to me, and I want to pay them back. So having said that, having heard him say that, I decided that, you know what, that's good enough for me. I like the way he handled that. It was something as simple as that. I like the way he began to, I like the way he raised his kids. Some people don't have great things to say about the kids, but I think they're well-rounded, educated, classy, respectful people, and I got to give them credit for that. So I started coming on KABC and really getting behind him and voted for him. And I think the ideas he has for this country are great. Maybe you think I'm wrong. If you think I'm wrong, call me. 800-222-5222. Let's argue. But the thing is, I can't dislike the guy. There are things he does that that aggravate me, of course. I hate the Twitter stuff. You can't... Why he gets on Twitter at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I just picture him sitting on the toilet. And by the way, his toilet is gold. I'm not lying about that. I happen to know that for a fact. I was there. It's a gold toilet. So he's probably sitting on the toilet. The guys in the control room are going crazy. He's got a gold toilet. Yeah. Anyhow, and he's tweeting at those crazy hours, and he's saying the most insane stuff. I just think that he's got a lot on his plate. Excuse me. He's got to erase a lot of stuff that's happened to this country that I think Obama did poorly. And he's got a lot of Obama's people all around him, and he can't really do what he wants to do. I mean, the thing I like to talk about is because I'm from the media, and look, you got to answer me this question. Does the media hate Donald Trump, and why do you think they do? I happen to know that as a part of the media, I didn't like him for a while. But now I know there's a definite vendetta against him by some major outfits around the country. And I'd like to hear what you think. Give me a call, 222-5222. And I want to talk about these leaks. This poor guy. You know, I made a living finding leaks in people's businesses, in people's lives. It isn't that hard to do. When you're a good columnist, it's like being a good cop. You've got to find the right people. You got to find the weakest people and charm them. And you've got to, you know, it's kind of can get gross sometimes because you're saying things you sometimes don't mean. And then once you get somebody talking, the trick is you just keep them talking. You know, you don't talk to them. Let them talk. They bury themselves. They end up telling you everything you need to know without you asking anything. And one of the best things you can do as a columnist, and I think a lot of people now aren't doing this to Trump. They're just berating him. They're in his face constantly. But if you really want to get to Trump, if you want him to make a mistake, this goes out to every reporter out there. Let him keep talking. Don't put words in his mouth. Let him talk. He'll hang himself. Trust me. The guy's about to say some crazy stuff. And on the other end of this break, I'm going to tell you a crazy story I heard about Trump that I know to be true. We're back in a few minutes. That's me. That's my song. I love fame. I love it, man. I love that I had a job that I said the word fame, and it's associated with a song like this. That's cool. That's good stuff. KABC 790, the phone call. The phone number is 222-5222. The question is, does the media hate Trump and why? I want to take some calls. Let's talk to Tony in Fullerton. Tony, what's up? Does the media hate Trump? What do you think? Tony?
I'm sorry. I absolutely believe that the media has a vendetta against Trump. I mean, Trump could cure cancer, and the media will scream that cancer has the right to exist.
Yeah, they'll say, well, cancer's not. Obama was on his way to curing that, then really, Trump didn't do it. Now, but you know, what is it that you, I mean, I'm sure you have your differences with Trump. I don't want anybody to think I'm out here acting like the guy is the most brilliant man I've ever met. I have a lot of differences with him. There are things he does I don't like, but four or five of his ideas to fix the country, I dig. And that's why I went with him. What about you?
Exactly. No, that's exactly why I went with him. But I do agree with you on the Twitter. I think that he has to be a little more strategic and not just shoot from the hip. I think it works for him, but...
Yeah. I think Tony just got ran over by a motorcycle. Oh, there he is. Yeah, you know what, Tony? We got a bad connection, but I'll tell you, thanks for the call. I call Trump one of those people who graduated from the Ready, Fire, Aim school of tact and timing. You know, he just does stuff and thinks about it later. He doesn't really plan it out. And that's surprising because a guy like him has had a hell of a career, a hell of a life, because he is a great planner and does know how to walk the line and do things right. But he's so in love with being voted by winning the presidency with Twitter. You know, he loves talking about his followers. He's like Paris Hilton, for God's sake. Let's go to Rob in El Segundo. Rob, what's up?
Hey, AJ, how you doing?
All right, what's up, my man?
Hey, I just wanted to say, why would we give Trump a pass? You know, this guy doesn't hand out passes to nobody.
Well, I don't want to give him a pass. No, he don't deserve a pass, bro. I don't mean that. You can scrutinize anybody in a position of power, but having worked in the newspaper business, the way the news organizations are going about it now is the closest thing I've ever seen to yellow journalism, which is to say, it's crooked as hell. I mean, you have to remember.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they're not. A lot of things they say about him are not proven. They just make announcements and then try to prove it. They do this.
Well, like saying somebody wiretapped me and then everybody in the government saying that they didn't?
We don't know that story yet. We don't know that story, so I'm not going to say that he's wrong.
Everybody from every intelligence agency and both House, Senate, and everybody is saying it. Well, we'll wait till Monday, but it looks like he's turning out to be a liar.
No, you know, he does play with the truth. I'll give you that. But Obama was maybe the best liar we've ever seen. That guy made us.
You know what, AJ, I think he should not do this because he can get sued for slander and defamation of character on this right here. You've seen how Hulk Hogan took out Gawker.
He can probably do that to them.
And Mark Levin and Breitbart, they're involved too. So
well, let me ask you a question.
He's got a big lawsuit with Danden on there.
If that's the case, where are the papers? Why aren't they not filing? I mean, you got to understand something. When you're from the business I'm from and people make statements like that, that you think, oh, man, they could sue the guy. Why aren't they? What's the problem? The problem is there's some truth to it. That's the problem. Thanks for the call. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe it's some truth to what Obama is saying, or maybe it's some truth to what the House and Senate and all the intelligence agencies are saying, that Trump is just wrong about this.
I have no proof of this. I got a feeling he's right. I got a feeling that what we've seen lately with wiretapping and phones and TVs that can look at us and all this, everything that's going on right now that's so 1984 and George Orwell about America, I tend to believe that a former president could wiretap somebody that was going to run for president. I firmly believe that could happen. I don't know why it's so far-fetched. It's crazy the way Trump just announced it, but I certainly believe it could happen. Crazy things happen in Washington. We're back after the break.
Happy St. Patrick's Day from 790 KBC.
Yeah. It's like I'm like at the club again, man. I went out last night to a club down in L.A. and Hollywood called Tao, T-A-O. The whole world was there. It was one of those parties where you got to get there at 8 because the fire marshal will shut it down at 9. And then you got to hang around in the street till 11 till they open it back up again. That's what the cool people do. But I'm not cool anymore. I'm 54. I said earlier I'm fat and I sweat a lot now. So I didn't want to be out there that long. Got in a fight in the street last night. Didn't sleep at all. I'm on zero sleep. Terrible night for me, but I'm very happy to be at KBC. The phone number here is 222. Oh, I'm sorry, 1-800-222-5222. The question was, does the media hate Trump and why? I got some callers. I want to hear from some people. Let's go to Steve in LA. What's up, Steve?
Yes, well, you're listening to your introduction to you, who you are. You're a much better person than Trump.
Thank you. Well, what does that get me?
Much better person.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I've yet to hear the president apologize for any of his statements written.
He never will.
Twittered. You know, every time he's with someone, he's with Merkel today.
Yeah.
This is an embarrassing meeting for everyone. He was with Ryan the other day. That was an embarrassing meeting for them. You know, no one's ever going to sue because, and they're not going to sue the media because the slander laws, it has to be malice instead of just reporting. So you can't really sue. And I think Obama is above this. And I think they're just going to let Trump stew in his own juices.
Yeah.
The guy has been incredibly lucky in business.
I don't know about that. I mean, you can't make it all luck.
Well, you know, he was lucky because his creditors gave him some more money for him to go away from his three casinos, which he torpedoed himself in Atlantic City. And you'll find that no one loans him money in the U.S. One of the problems is Deutsche Bank, the Chinese banks, maybe some Russian people have loaned him all this money.
I know what you're getting at, but it's something that always kind of irritates me is I can go down the slam in Trump Street as long as I want. I can go punch for punch with anybody that wants to say bad stuff about him. But the thing about he's just lucky. I mean, you can't just be lucky and make billions of dollars. You have to have something people want. Now, his personality, his personality is for the birds sometimes. He's never going to apologize. He'll never say, I was wrong. Those are two qualities he doesn't have. But I happen to think that Obama had qualities that I was climbing the walls. He was aggravating me. The way he lied, the way he just apologized for America over and over again. The one thing I feel about Donald Trump that I happen to like, and thanks for the call, buddy. The one thing I like is that I feel like once he gets his footing and they let him govern, I think America will start to feel better about itself and its standing around the world. I happen to believe that because I'm from blue-collar people. We didn't have money growing up. A lot of my buddies, a lot of my cousins, a lot of the people I'm still friendly with from grade school, we're all the same people. And I think a lot of us felt disenfranchised over the last several years, last decade or two. The world is different. There's a lot of outside people coming in and doing things that that Americans used to do. And I'm all for, you know, I'm all for a big rainbow and everybody gets along. And that's all nice. But at some point, whether you're playing a baseball game or a poker game or whatever, sometimes the game is locked. We got too many people. Can't let you in. Private party. It's filled. It'll empty out later on. But right now, it's filled up here. And I think if we let anybody else in, it better be from countries that, well, let's put it this way. The Muslim ban, the countries that he doesn't want people coming from. You know, why are we so upset about that? Do people really think that those parts of the world, that the people there make wonderful things and bring wonderful things with them? I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for that comment, but I feel like their best export is explosive vests, for God's sake. Let's take Brenda at Long Beach.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
You know, happy St. Patty Days to you.
Thank you, babe.
AJ, you know what? You can give Sean Hannity a run for his money. Matter of fact, you guys can get a knockdown, drag-out fight and get 86 out of the bar.
Wow.
For sure.
I wish I had his
for
hair.
Sure.
I wish I had Sean Hannity's hair. He's a Long Island guy, and the thing about Sean Hannity that I know what he's like. I know he's a big puppet for Trump. I get it, but
I know. But you can still give him a run for his money because what Trump did to you and your girlfriend, you can give him a run for your money. You can give him hell.
Do you think I'm crazy for turning around and voting for him?
No. You're a better man.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what.
What?
That takes a lot of guts to do what you just did and what you just said.
Thank you.
And you know what? I think you can get Sean Hannity a run for his money.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
I think you get knocked down, drag out. Irish fight and get kicked out of the bar.
Well, I'm Italian, though, so it wouldn't be much of a fight.
Well, whoop the whoop. Whoop, whoop, whoop. You know how that say.
Yeah.
You know goomba. You know how that say goomba. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
I got it, babe. Thanks for the call.
Hey, I want to ask you something else. I want to ask you something real quick.
Yeah.
You know about this Obamacare?
Obamacare. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, yeah. How many people actually died when he put that in there? Because they say Bob Alive people died. How many people actually die because it's full?
I don't know. Look, healthcare is such a mess. It's embarrassing that America, the greatest country in the world, can't figure this out. It's so embarrassing that every night we talk about this and no one can figure it out. You got me pissed off now, Brenda. Maria, make me feel better. Maria in Anaheim, what's up, hon?
Yes, I would like to say that Donald Trump is basically going to give more money for war, and this is basically not good for America, because it's more money to basically what, kill people, and not enough money to have this country and any other country has to be arrogant. Why is it that you have to just show that you're the most powerful in the world?
Let me ask you a question. Why is it that you have to be arrogant? Why did you come here? What is it about America that you like that you came here for? Why did it make you leave wherever you came from?
Well, because the economic...
You can be whatever you want to be, right?
...of my country are not good, and the country is very poor.
This is what I don't like. I got to be honest with you.
This is the reason why my mother came here, and she immigrated me. But it's also the reason why there are so many problems here for the poor people is because the rich are always trying to make them work for less money and trying them to just basically stay in that stage of poverty. They don't want for people to...
You know, I don't know. I mean, look. The thing is, your mother came to this country. You've made a life for yourself here. God bless America for that. My people came from Italy and did the same thing. But here's the difference that I find fascinating. When my grandparents came here, they came here and they spoke Italian, but yet they still managed to get great jobs and raise their kids. And they told their kids, don't speak Italian at home. Speak English at home. And they made their kids speak English. And they also made their kids love America. And they also made them understand you're in the greatest country in the world. They never once turned around and said America's arrogant. They never said it's an arrogant place. They never said it pushes people around. They thank their lucky stars that the boat came this way and they came here. And we're all happy for that. The people that want to come here now from the countries Trump is trying to dissuade from coming here, they don't love America. They just hate where they are. There's a difference. We're back in a minute. I'm your biggest fan. Love it. It makes me think of all those days and nights I spent on the red carpets trying to get movie stars to talk to me. And that's not true. I never did that crap. That's for those soft people at Extra and Entertainment Tonight, not real hardcore journalists. Speaking of journalism, by the way, AJ Benza, KBC Friday Night Special. The number here is 1-800-222-5222. The question I posed earlier was, does the media hate Trump and why? I got to bring something up here. I tend to always, even though I'm not a practicing journalist, I still get stories. And I'm actually getting back into writing. I'm writing for a few outlets, and there's one in particular that I want to announce down the road, but it could be a really cool spot. But I still get my hands on stuff, and I haven't put this anywhere yet, but this is a hell of a story. And it's a lot more interesting than when Donald Trump didn't shake Angela Merkel's hand. You know Tamron Hall, the beautiful, she was on the Today Show, beautiful short-haired black woman, gorgeous, gorgeous. I mean, Tamron Hall broke down in tears when Prince died, and we come to find out that Prince took a shine to Tamron. He flew her out to Minneapolis. She went to go see him. She got really close to Prince. Prince is good like that. So Tamron is an opportunistic woman. And my sources, who are in and around NBC, told me that there was a big investigation for a while on Trump's girlfriends and who he was with, etc. And what they turned up was Tamron Hall was dating Donald Trump in 2012 when he was married to Melania. Now, I have a theory about Melania. I don't think Melania cares if he steps out. She's probably like a mob wife. Step out, just don't embarrass me. You know, don't make the bitch wash your face with my washcloth. It's probably that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, he was with Tamron Hall. And apparently there were incriminating emails, you know, with I love you on them. I mean, she was going to Gucci and going to high-end stores using his discount. Apparently, if you're a big real estate mogul and you spend tons of money around Manhattan, stores just give you a discount because you spend a lot of money. So she used his discount at Gucci. Interestingly enough, Tamron Hall, who's got a great career, a couple of weeks ago, she leaves the Today Show. She walks off the NBC show. The reason they gave was, you know, Megyn Kelly's coming and Tamron felt like she was like pushed away. I don't buy that. I'm thinking more along the lines of, does NBC want to be embarrassed again? NBC feels a little guilty looking back on The Apprentice because, look, I take responsibility for making Donald Trump famous enough and blowing his head and his name up enough that he got himself a major television show that ran for 14 seasons. If I can take credit for that, then NBC's got to take credit for putting him on the map and making him powerful enough and well-known enough to run for president of the United States. And I don't think they're happy that he won. And I think they're very embarrassed about that, about the tape. You know what I mean? About Billy Bush. They don't want one more piece of embarrassment. And I think Tamron kind of walked away before because maybe she was told, listen, this is going to get ugly. We have information. And in fact, that story goes deeper. But I'm not going to say what I want to say on this type of show. But you can read between the lines. They were dating. They were doing stuff. Sometimes things happen. You got to go someplace to take care of things. That kind of story. I don't want to say any more than that. But the thing is, I sat down with Vanity Fair magazine. They're doing a big expose on all Donald Trump's girlfriends. And now I get calls. Now I'm the guy. I'm the go-to guy because we're Eskimo brothers. We had the same woman. So now I get to talk about all of his girlfriends. And one of the things that Vanity Fair was just crazy to talk about is they couldn't believe that he got a lot of girls. Like they found it fascinating that Donald Trump dated beautiful women. I said, let me tell you, the women he dated, are you out of your mind? He dated the most beautiful women because women love power. I mean, I used to tell my girlfriend, after we broke up and we got back together, I used to say, what was it? Why? How could you lay next to him and kiss him? What is it about that guy? I'm old enough now to realize what things women want. Maybe they want security. They want to feel safe. They like having a guy with that kind of money that can do things for you, make life simpler. But you know, he did have amazingly beautiful women. But for some reason, the media, and this is weird, because if Obama or any other president had beautiful women, they'd boast about it. They'd say great things about it. This media doesn't want to talk about it. So they're embarrassed by it because they can't fathom it, that a man who looks like that and acts like that can get fine women. When we come back, we're going to talk to R.J. Bond at the 9 o'clock hour. This guy knows who killed Tupac Shakur. Everything else you've heard and seen before this interview is baloney. Don't believe it. I know all the books. I know all the movies. They're crap. This one's the real one. We're back in a minute.
The ABC Friday Night Special with the King of Hollywood Mysteries and Scandals.
Can you be more specific?
He also slapped Stuttering John right in the kisser.
Oh!
It's a Friday Night Special with AJ Benza.
Oh, is that a techno version of Hooray for Hollywood? Oh, we gotta get Ethel Merman in the back. That'd be an awesome, awesome jam. I'm very excited about who I'm bringing on next, R.J. Bond and Michael Douglas Carlin. I just want to say real quick, A.J. Benza, 790 KABC, Friday night special. The number here is 222-5222. Do call in if you have any questions or any theories about Well, forget the theories because you're wrong. I have the real story. And the thing about the Tupac murder and the Biggie murder, it was a lot bigger than just two people getting killed. You know, you got could you imagine nowadays if John Mayer and Ed Sheeran were rubbed out in the street and the cops never found out who killed them? Are you kidding me? That just wouldn't happen. But a couple of rappers, sure, listen, we can't. We'll work on it, but you never know. But Tupac, look, the media loved him. He got a lot of attention. And then you got a guy like Suge Knight, who was the head of Death Row Records, who was he started to believe himself. There was a book we read in school in the eighth grade called Animal Farm. And the major quote to take away from that book was power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that is what happened with Suge Knight. And I think that that's a good lead in with RJ and Michael. You guys there?
We're there. How you doing, man?
Hey, man, what's going on, guys? Thanks for being here.
We're happy to be here.
You know, I wanted to say the reason why I opened up with the absolute power corrupts absolutely is because I think that's what, in essence, happened with Suge Knight. Much like John Gotti kind of put an end to the mafia's old ways, because he loved attention. He loved being flashy. And the real old-time guys didn't like that. I think the real guys in the music business or the guys working in the music business, they didn't want a guy like Suge Knight to get that big. And then, of course, when you mix him with the lightning rod that is Tupac Shakur, someone's gonna get hurt, because there's a lot of money going around that people are laundering, etc. Set the stage, because it's very deep about what happened with Tupac and Suge.
I think that the place that we start looking at the investigation is really what one of the critical failures in the investigation was, and that is the inability to look at the big picture. I think if you get real myopic and you look at them as just two killings, I think you do yourself a disservice. You know, the 1980s and the late 1980s and the early 1990s was just a deluge of drugs, free-flowing money.
Yeah,
free-flowing drugs, just more than anybody knew.
It was Clinton, of course. Clinton got everybody. Listen, I was in the middle of it. Bill Clinton made me rich, and yeah, there was drugs and alcohol around, and it was party time. Absolutely, you're right.
It was a good time to be had by all, and of course, whenever there's a lot of money and a lot of drugs, there's a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And, we enter the movie and we talk about an operation called Operation Big Spender with the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. And that was a federal investigation on sheriffs that were actually shaking down drug dealers, taking the drugs away and stealing the cash.
Which has happened. That happens all over. But I mean, it was very prevalent where they were. Right.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. You were talking about the tune of $60 million that was being stolen cash off these drug dealers.
Jeez.
And, the drug dealers weren't saying much about it. But, of course, the Sheriff's Department, the good guys at the Sheriff's Department asked that the federal feds step in. And that kind of led to a big investigation. And, when you've got that kind of corruption or you've got that kind of influence and one guy's getting away with it, word gets out pretty fast.
Yeah.
It's an easy buck to make. And, Compton being what they call the hub city, it's kind of the center of commerce. They weren't strangers to controversy and corruption anyway.
No.
And of course, how are you going to pass on an opportunity that's just too good to have?
But I think what people don't realize in this whole scenario, and I'll just say real quickly that, there's been other movies about Tupac and Biggie. There's been books written, many, many articles written. And I've read them all and seen them all, and they just don't do it justice. They like to harp on that angle of the fight at the casino and Orlando Anderson, they're stomping on Orlando, rat packing him, as they call it, and then apparently he's the shooter. Well, it turns out he's not the shooter, but the media wanted us to believe it was caused for that, and it was also caused from Crips First Blood, and that's all nonsense, right?
Well, it's easy. I mean, it's a convenient truth. If you want to go to bed at night and not worry about crooked cops or not worry about corruption in law enforcement or city officials, and you want to just believe that a couple of gang guys, shot each other and that's the end of the story, it's pretty, puts a really nice bow around it.
Sure. What people don't know is there was major articles discredited by, was it Chuck Phillips, the LA Times?
Yeah, Chuck Phillips, he wrote some really bad information.
Yeah, I mean, talk about fake news. He wrote erroneous articles about this murder. And the thing is, obviously, people got to him, too, because he said things a certain way. I know what it's like when you get those phone calls. And he's touching on a subject that's pretty dicey and dangerous. But people were led to believe it happened that way. But I want to get down to what people don't understand is how many policemen were around Suge Knight, the owner of Death Row Records. How many policemen were around Tupac in general? And let the folks know how many of them were bodyguards, etc.
Michael, go ahead.
Well, what you had is you had Death Row Records that had a big problem with Snoop Dogg, with his murder trial.
Mm-hmm.
And if Snoop would have had an off-duty cop working for him at the time that Malik shot Philip Waldemariam, you would have never had that scenario happen. And so there was a protocol change inside of Death Row Records where they only used off-duty police as security. And when Tupac came to the record label, it was a big problem because Tupac was hated by the police.
Because of Atlanta,
he had shot two off-duty cops in Atlanta, and so none of the cops wanted to bodyguard him.
Yeah.
And they had Frank Alexander, who was a non-cop,
mm-hmm.
was Tupac's bodyguard. You had Michael Moore, who was a fireman,
right.
who was Tupac's bodyguard. But all of the other artists were bodyguarded by LAPD, Inglewood Police, Compton Police, Compton School Police. And so you had all of these off-duty cops working for Death Row Records, and it was an escalating pattern of behavior that happened inside of Death Row Records.
And Michael, how many of those cops died under mysterious circumstances? I'm talking about heart attacks at 42, alleged suicides. Weren't they very prevalent? Well, I remember there were a number of deaths of bodyguards surrounding Tupac and Suge that just didn't smell right.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead,
RJ. Well, there was a lot of Suge had a lot of bodyguards that were his kind of thugs, his hitmen, and they certainly dropped like flies right after the time that Suge went to prison.
Right.
They started dropping like flies, and then of course you had Frank Alexander, much much later, of course, died under mysterious circumstances, and then of course Russell Poole, who basically wrote the book on the Biggie investigation.
Uh-huh.
No matter what anybody else claims, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he died under mysterious circumstances right there at LA County Sheriff's headquarters.
Now, but here's what I like. I want to set the stage here. So we're in Vegas. We're on the strip. Everybody knows it happened on Flamingo Road at a red light. Suge is driving. But that night, there was a call. Reggie Wright Jr., right? Head of security. Bad guy. He's a bad guy and kind of running the show. But tell the folks how crazy it was when it came to radio, who was carrying radios, who was and wasn't carrying guns that night as bodyguards, and how many checkpoints they had covered.
I mean, listen, if this wasn't something that was just, you know, intentionally done, you've got the Keystone Cops. It was mm-hmm. the worst security outfit, you know, ever. You've got, you know, bodyguards were told that night not to carry any weapons. And there was all this talk about, well, they were told because of, you know, permit issues or whatever. You know, Las Vegas is an open carry.
It's open carry. You can carry at Denny's if you want to.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you've got that. And then on top of that, Frank Alexander, who's the main bodyguard for Tupac Shakur,
mm-hmm.
he goes there and he gets told that he can't have a radio. There's not enough radios to go around. Death Row, it's a $500 million record company.
Yeah.
You can't go down to Radio Shack and just buy a radio, for God's sake. So, you know, you've got this whole clown show going on where they're not arming security. And the one guy, Michael Moore, who says he's going to carry his weapon anyway, they take him off of Tupac Shakur and put him over at Club 662 to keep him away from everything. So, you know, you've got this whole thing. You've got the head of security calling people in their rooms, checking to see where they are that night, just making sure they're where they're supposed to be, including their hotel rooms not working. And you've got this whole, like I said, if it wasn't intentional, it would be the worst Keystone Cop farce of security you'd ever, I don't even know.
But here's the weird thing, and I know I want to get to the great point you make about the confession letter, etc. The movie, of course, is called Tupac Assassination Battle for Compton. And where is it now? It's on iTunes and Amazon everywhere?
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's Amazon, Google, Play. Okay. You've got iTunes. I mean, if you want it, you can find it. If you got Amazon Prime, you get it for free.
All right, good. You got to see this movie. I'm telling you, it's riveting, and I've seen all of them. But what fascinated me was that, Suge was probably the intended victim that night in the car, right? And he gets hit with a fragment on his skull. But he was the intended victim, you say.
Well, yeah, you've got to take – if you take Tupac out of it for a minute, let's say that somebody drives down the road and they're going to shoot at Tupac and Suge. Let's take Tupac out of the car for a minute. If you're going to be ballsy enough – and it doesn't matter who it is and doesn't matter what your motive is. If you're going to shoot at Tupac, that's one thing. But you're talking about arguably one of the heaviest hitters in the record industry. This guy had power. He had money. He had guns. He could pretty much get whatever he wanted to. And if you're going to be crazy enough to run up on Tupac, you're also shooting at that very man.
Right.
So
right.
You better hit what you're shooting at. I mean, to suggest that it was the way they've said it is a fool's errand, because if you're not going to kill both of them, you've got a real problem on your hands.
I just can't believe that they're all they're gangsters and they're shooters, and for God's sake, what, 13, 14 bullets in the car, and they can't hit a 300-pound man like Suge Knight. They hit him with a that's just ridiculous to me that they miss so badly. But what I also don't like is that Suge Knight got on a plane and went back to L.A.
Well, and there's an experience modification that happens between the Tupac murder and the Biggie murder. They hire a professional shooter in the Biggie murder, and they use armor-piercing rounds
right. The
next time they do this. And so you can see these guys had an escalating pattern of behavior, and they learned from their mistakes.
Yeah, they definitely knew what they were doing in the second one. We're up against the break. I'm going to bring you back for the second segment because I want to talk about the confession letter. I want to talk about the Patton brothers, which is fascinating. I want people to hear exactly and crystallize it as to say how you think it went down exactly. We're with R.J. Bond and I'm sorry, Michael Douglas Carlin. And the movie is Tupac Assassination Battle for Compton. A.J. Benz at KABC. We're back in a minute.
And if I wasn't, then why would I say I am? In the paper, the news, every day I am. Radio won't even play my jam, cause I am.
I'll tell you, after Tupac, I became obsessed with Eminem. I love Eminem, but I'm with R.J. Bond and Michael Douglas Carlin. This is A.J. Benza on KABC 790. The number here is 222-5222. There's two points I want to get to. I got 6 minutes, so I want you guys to be as concise as you can. I know it's not easy because this is a big story, but in particular, you've got a confession letter that I want the folks to understand what that's about and who the Patton boys, the Patton brothers are.
All right, Michael, you're concise.
The confession letter is something that was given to Chris Blatchford from Fox 11. It was given to him as an insurance policy, and at one point the Patton brothers wanted to come forward. He actually had conversation with them on the phone, and he was brought in by a man named Robert Soria, who was a confidential informant he had used before.
Right.
And they said that they were in the car the night that Tupac was killed, or he wasn't killed that night, but he was shot, and they said that they wanted to come clean with this because they were afraid they were going to be killed.
And the Patton brothers—they're the real deal. Those are shooters. Those guys get things done.
Yeah, they're fixers. That's what they do.
Fixers, right?
And it's funny. That night, they didn't get things done, and the other person that they said was in the car was Little Half Dead, which happens to be Snoop Dogg's cousin, and on his album cover, he has a image of the slain Tupac Shakur slain Yaak Fula on his album cover.
Unbelievable. I saw that. That's the, yeah, I saw that. And then there was some issue with the song Brenda Got a Baby at the Little Half Dead said he had written that years earlier or something like that, right?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a quick second, AJ. The confession letter talks about the problem with demo stealing and that, you know, it was happening pretty rampantly.
Sure.
Rappers would steal each other's demos. And in there, it also mentions that Little Half Dead may have given a demo to Tupac, and Little Half Dead believed that Tupac had stolen a demo of his that ended up somehow being part of Brenda's Got a Baby.
Mm.
And, you know, the big thing, everybody, you know, that's heard that, they laugh it off because many people know that Tupac wrote Brenda's Got a Baby.
Yeah,
I don't think there's anybody that disputes that.
Right.
And so it immediately gets laughed off. Well, that just can't be true. But, you know, you have to look at it and understand that, you know, if Little Half Dead just thought that he got ripped off, I mean, how many people do you know that like to take claim for somebody else's work?
Sure.
Didn't. Either way, it doesn't make each fact, you know, mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, Tupac, no doubt, wrote Little Brenda's Got a Baby.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean the Little Half Dead didn't feel somehow that he had been slighted.
And if you feel slighted, that's reason enough to go off and do what you want to do anyhow. You don't need anything more than that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know? You don't need anything. That's right. Entire civilizations have gone to war over false assumptions. Mm-hmm. You know, what can mm-hmm. you say?
Yeah, and you know, what's fascinating about the movie, Tupac Assassination, Battle for Compton, Reggie Wright Jr. is mentioned a lot. And real quick, I want the folks to know basically what his gig was and why he was as dirty as he was.
Michael?
Well, Reggie Wright Jr. originally worked as a jailer for the Compton jails, and he was known to rip off the inmates that were in the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was known to run the drug trade in Compton, and he and his partner were known to rip off drug dealers. And so there's this pattern of theft, and, you know, we go back to the escalating pattern of behavior. Well, now all of a sudden he has the ability to topple Suge Knight and to take over Death Row Records, and that's exactly what happens.
The ending is really fantastic. The whole movie's fantastic. There's even something in there. We don't have time to get into it now. Maybe just real quickly, I love the story about the helicopter going from L.A. To Las Vegas, Nevada. If you can say that story in a minute, let the folks know, because that's great.
Yeah, well, you know, the what we found out, and this came as a late development in doing the movie, it slowed us down, actually, but we found out that there was a no-bid contract that was awarded to the city of Las Vegas from the city of Compton, and this contract was for the purchase, no-bid purchase on a helicopter that was worth about $1 million.
Yeah.
And here you've got the city of Compton with an $11 million budget and the city of Las Vegas with $500 million budget. Yeah. And yet you're selling $1 million helicopter to the city of Las Vegas from Compton for pennies on the dollar.
And principally because Las Vegas, Nevada's PD kind of had they knew where this was going. They were getting hip to what this murder was all about and who might have done it. Correct.
Well, yeah, they kept beating. I mean, they were trying it the other way. They kept trying to push the Orlando Anderson theory on Vegas PD. They kept trying to pony up and put things in front of Vegas PD. Will you buy it? Will you buy it? Will you buy it? They weren't buying it.
They were smart.
We went the other way.
They got it. They were smart.
So they went the other way. If I can't, you know, it's the carrot or the stick. They tried the stick. That didn't work. So now they're going to try the carrot. Let's do something nice for you. Let's give you this helicopter, which you can burn up on the launch pad and get some insurance money out of it. You know, I mean, it's so many mob tactics that you see. You know, AJ, you and I are a couple of Goombas here.
Yeah.
You know, we know mob tactics.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't take much to see that this isn't really all that significant. It's kind of garden variety.
Of course. And you know what? Tupac liked me because, as he said, I was Italian, and he liked hanging around with Italians. I actually took him to Brooklyn a couple of times to see some tough guys. He loved that. But listen, anybody who's got anything to do or nothing to do this weekend, get the movie, Tupac Assassination, Battle for Compton. It's personal for me because I knew the guy, and you guys did a great job. I can't wait to see what you do next. RJ, Bond and Michael. It was such Michael Douglas Carl. I forget. It's like because you have three first names in your name. That's why it's confusing. You could be anybody. Michael Douglas Carl and RJ Bond. Guys, thanks for calling in. You did a great job in the film, and I'll talk to you down the road.
AJ, all right, man. Take care, buddy.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
We're back in a minute.
Night special with AJ Benza.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear.
This is good. I love hearing music like this. It makes me, it feeds my ego. Superstar, fame. Hot. 790 KABC, AJ Benza here with you on the Friday night special. The number here is 222-5222. I should say 800-222-5222. But you know that. You've heard it all day long. So I know you know it. You know, I wanted to talk about last night real quickly because it ties into OJ Simpson, of all people. I was lucky and very fortunate enough in my career as a gossip columnist to cover some ridiculously amazing events that were very newsworthy. My page broke the Michael Jackson molestation story. We were out front on all the OJ developments. You know, even stories like, if you remember, Divine Brown and Hugh Grant. There were so many scandalous stories that happened during that period, and I was there for it. Woody Allen starting to be with Soon-Yi Previn. I mean, it was insane. Every week there was something going on. So after a certain period of time in your life, you look back and go, well, this is going to be my obituary. As you hear on the bump-ins, you know, I'm the guy with Smack Stuttering John. I'm the guy that dated the same girl Donald Trump did. Those are things that are going to be in my obit. I can't escape them. And I always tell my wife and other people who ask, you know, you are who people say you are. As much as you want to try to fight it and try something new and find another niche, it might work, but basically you are who people say you are. So I am, whether I like it or not, the gossip guy, the guy that gets stories and gets the good and gets dirt. And I'll eventually do a podcast next month. I'm going to have my own podcast. It's funny, a buddy of mine in West Islip, Long Island, a buddy I grew up with named Mike Agavino, came out here. He's very, very smart guy, and he started a company, Workhouse Productions. He's got a bunch of podcasts running up and down now, and we're going to do something soon. So I'm going to just embrace this. I've got to go tell my stories. And one story I really love, and it has to do with whether or not you think I was a good reporter or not. Basically, I showed up, and I was nosy and interested. You got to be that. So when the O.J. Simpson story broke, I was invited to a party at a guy's house named Mark Packer. Mark's a big restaurateur. Like I said, he owns Tao in different cities, Vegas, New York, L.A. And he was there last night. And I remember when I went to Mark Packer's Manhattan apartment or loft, big place. I said, you know, this is going to be awkward. I got to ask him about O.J., but it's awkward. It's a good friend of his. I mean, Mark Packer was mentioned in O.J.'s suicide note. So I get to the apartment, and every picture you see on the wall is Mark, O.J., and Nicole in Aspen. Mark, O.J., and Nicole on a yacht. And I go, how am I going to ask this guy a question? And all I said to him was, hey, buddy, you know, maybe he didn't do it. And Mark just said, what are you, crazy? Of course he did. He used to beat the crap out of her every day. So right there, boom, I have basically my story finished, that Mark Packer and other OJ friends knew that he was guilty or felt that he was guilty. And it kind of ties in to what we were talking about earlier about whether there's leaks in the White House administration or what is a leak and how do these things happen. And, you know, there's no such thing as a leak. People put things out because they want it seen. Somebody at an organization or on a movie or working for someone wants something out. And if you make yourself available, you get the information. If you're a good listener, you get the information. Let them talk. And one thing that I can say I'm proud of that I did, I made myself available. And I went out with these folks as long as I can, as long as I could and as late as I could. And once you stay out with somebody till 3-4 o'clock in the morning and the drinking and the drugs and alcohol kick in, people say enough to hang themselves. And if you're there, you get the story. We're back in a minute.
Yeah.
AJ Benza, 790 KBC, Friday night special. The number is 222-5222. You know, I was talking a few minutes ago about being a good journalist, writing a good column, what have you. It's very different now. Even the kind of people I write for now, most of the stuff they want has to do with, you know, the people that are young and famous that to me are so shallow and have just nothing about them that's interesting. I'd rather slit my wrist than write a story about Selena Gomez. I can't. I just can't get into it. But the people in my day, I felt like had more weight. John Kennedy Jr., Tupac. I mean, there was a ton of them. But what gets lost in all this, you know, nowadays everybody's a writer. Everybody's got a column or a blog. And they just get up there and they say what they want to say. No one checks it. No one vets it. There's no editor. Every day at the Daily News, our column was vetted by three different editors. It was read by two lawyers, and you couldn't go home until they knew that, okay, it's good to go. You don't just press send in your basement and call yourself a writer. That kind of gets me upset. But one thing that people never talk about, and you know, I take all the compliments from people who say, well, you were a great reporter. You know what's really misunderstood? So many stories and articles and columns are written. And if they were really done right, at the end of the column, there should be a list of names of all the people who helped you get that story. And if that were the case, you'd have like a roll of credits. There'd be like 15 or 20 people because it's an endless amount of people who help you get a story. And they can come from all weird areas of life that you didn't anticipate. I mean, would you believe that the Michael Jackson molestation case was broken by our column and it was given to us by a small white-haired Jewish man who ran a haberdashery store in Manhattan? It makes no sense. But his wife was cross-country friends with the wife of the guy who owned Rent-A-Wreck, and their son was being courted by Michael Jackson to go to Disney World and Disneyland. And it didn't look right to this, my old friend Bernie, who's now deceased. And Bernie called me one day and said, AJ, I think I have an interesting story for you. I said, what is it, Bernie? Michael Jackson has a new friend. He's 13 years old. And just think of hearing that sentence before you know what ended up happening to Michael Jackson's life. It just didn't sound right. So we printed the kid's name, Jordy Chandler. And boy, did that name turn out to be, that was an explosive story. But when, getting back to doing what I did, when I was covering that trial, I put myself in positions to get information. I made sure I dated Jermaine Jackson's ex-wife because, you know, exes of the Jacksons love to tell stories about the Jacksons. But what got really creepy one day, and I did the same thing with OJ's exes too. I went out with Paula Barbieri. There was another girl, Tracy Adele, who posed for Playboy, who was on the phone with OJ when he was really despondent when Barbieri left town to go, I think she went to, I don't know, she went to Vegas with Michael Bolton, which really pissed them off. But anyhow, I lost my train of thought on the story. I was going to say, damn it, it was a good one too. It has to do with the people that helped me. I forget. Oh, anyhow, you've got to put yourself in the right position. And one of the ways to do that is to make yourself available to women. I know, it sounds like I'm a real tramp. But listen, you got to do it for the good of the column, you know? Do you think I liked dating Ronald Reagan's daughter, Patty Davis? No, I didn't want to do it, but I knew I'd get some good stories out of it. I was doing it for the paper, and that's what you got to do. But you get given things. So when I was hanging around with Jermaine Jackson's ex, here's my point. I remembered it. One day I'm at the house. We had slept late, and the phone rings, and I picked up. I don't know why, but I picked. She said, "You can answer it," and I answered it, and it was a man who sounded like an Indian, you know, Pakistani, whatever. And he was doing, I couldn't understand his words. And I'm like, who is this? And he made a name up, I don't know, Punjab, whatever he was calling himself. And it was Michael Jackson disguising his voice. He was calling because he wanted to take the two boys, her two sons, to Neverland. And I, you know, I was like insane that of all the people he would call, of all the people to pick the phone up, it's the gossip columnist that's hot on his tail to break all these stories. Now, he didn't know it was me, but he ended up finding out that I was hanging around with her. And good old Michael, as sweet and wonderful as we all know he was, he could be hard and cold as ice when it came time to his privacy. I mean, he cut her off. She had to beg me to not print any more stories about Michael. It got to the point where I couldn't be seen around her, because if I was, Michael just wouldn't pay for her kids. He wouldn't pay for her apartment. Michael was paying for a lot of people for a long time. A lot of people lived on his dime. Not only his brothers, but his brothers' ex-wives and their kids. So, you know, he can be really strong and hard when he wanted to. And it got weird. And the same thing went for OJ. There were all people around him that couldn't wait to talk. When I used to do the Geraldo Rivera show, every Friday Geraldo did a OJ special for a year straight. It was great. Everybody was there. Everybody showed up. But Faye Resnick, I mean, Cato Kaelin, who I adore, he's great. Lance Ito would come to New York and go to the strip clubs. It was such a circus back then that everything you needed was right there in front of you. You didn't have to really do any hardcore research or any hardcore work. You just had to, like I said, you had to show up and you had to be there and you had to let them talk. And if you let yourself become available for a long period of time and maybe indulge in some of the drugs and alcohol, which, again, I didn't want to, but I got stories to write, you end up getting great stories. So, look, I'm going to do this more often. I'm going to get myself a nice writing gig that I think you guys would like to read now and again. I'm going to come back after this minute break, but there's one nice story I want to leave you with that says a lot about Mark Wahlberg. We're back in a minute. Glass up in the sky. Who is this again? Who sings this again? Who? Fergie, yeah. No, I love this song. Very cool song. AJ Benz is 790 KABC Friday night special. I felt kind of special tonight. It's nice they give you a couple hours to do this. I got to thank the boys and the girls here who dragged me out of my house with no sleep. But I felt good. I hope you guys see the Tupac movie. It really is amazing. But I'm going to leave you with a nice story that, it's half nice and half sad. But it tells you a lot about some of the big people in this town. And you might think a certain way about them. And maybe you'd be wrong. But Mark Wahlberg, Penny Marshall, and Carrie Fisher. How do they all fit into this story? Penny Marshall was friends with Carrie Fisher for 30 years. They used to have birthday parties together in October. Their parties in L.A. were big events. They were like the Oscars. Everybody went. So when Carrie Fisher died, Penny Marshall went into a funk. She's been in a funk for 2 months. Bad. She's living with Mark Wahlberg now. Wahlberg's got a couple of houses, and he brought her in. Now, what's the connection? It's a very nice gesture, but why is Penny Marshall with Mark Wahlberg? It turns out in 1994, when Wahlberg was kind of getting over the Marky Mark thing and the Funky Bunch, he was going to act, and he auditioned for Renaissance Man, which Penny Marshall directed. And right before his audition, he didn't feel it. And he said, I'm not doing this. And he gave her the papers. He gave her the papers and said, I'm done. I'm not going to act. I can't act. And she said, what are you talking about? You're an actor. You're a rapper. You act. You act now. You're always acting. Take the paper, go outside, and give it your best shot. You're good at this. You can do this.